Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist, calling from Louisville, Kentucky tonight. How are you, Miss Laura?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Are you getting ready for your busy 3 weeks coming up here?
We are. We're gearing up. That's been the topic of the day, the weekend, the week.
I'm sure.
Getting ready to leave in the morning.
Ooh.
We're almost ready. I should probably put some things in a suitcase. I'm going to need more than conference manuals and slides. I'm going to need something to wear.
Well, I know that you have something cute that will be just perfect for. Where are you going first? Dallas, aren't you?
Dallas first. Yes, you do, since you're my personal shopper. So you totally know. Yeah, I'm very excited. We leave in 12 hours. I've got all kinds of time. It'll be fine.
Oh. Well, share with your listeners where you're going. I know Dallas is first, and then what's the whirlwind tour?
Dallas is on Wednesday. Shreveport is on Friday. And then New Orleans is on Thursday, October 27th. Lafayette is on Friday, October 28th. And then we end up in Indianapolis on Thursday, November. I'm not sure if it's second or third, that first Thursday in November. So come see me in one of those states if you're close to there. And we still have room everywhere. And even if we're getting close, I'll make room for you if you want to register. And you can find out all the information about our upcoming conferences at my website at teachmetotalk.com. Usually at the beginning of the show, too, we talk about what I've put on the Facebook page for TeachMeToTalk.com in the last week. And there was a cute picture yesterday that I shared from someone else's site, from the Brain Insights site. It was a little girl who's laughing hysterically at who knows what, but the caption was, "The brain learns best when it's having fun." And
aww.
I always think, I know, she's so cute. You'll have to look at it. Just the picture just makes you want to squeeze her. I have no idea who this little girl is. It's just, one of those Facebook pictures that someone uploaded or downloaded or whatever kind of loaded it is. And it was really, really cute. But I think that's a great message to remind us as therapists. We talk about it every week in our practices, certainly. I think that we convey that with the home visits that we do, but a lot of therapists don't think about fun as being an integral part of therapy sessions, and I just don't know how those folks make it through the day, because if I'm not having a good time, I really don't want to do it. How about you?
I'm pretty much with you, and I think that we'd be hard-pressed to find a two-year-old who didn't feel that way, and you know what we find is what oftentimes we're asking them to do is kind of difficult for them, and if you're not keeping it fun and having them really, really enjoy it, their performance suffers so much so that, you know.
Yeah.
It's really absolutely, I think, a huge part of a successful therapy session, but like you said, we believe it. We know that
right. It's
true because we see it day in and day out, and yet there are still some folks who don't really seem to recognize how important that is. So
yeah. It's
unfortunate.
But I thought it was a great reminder. So if you haven't looked at that, take a look at that cute little picture for all our listeners, because it's very, very cute. It'll make you just smile just looking at that cute little girl. And I think that's really all that's on there. That's all I'd written down, and I'm not going to flip my screen back over there. I do know what else is on there. There were some other ideas for things that we talked about last week with our fall therapy ideas. We had decided that we were going to do some seasonal therapy ideas this next year. Right now we're doing fall. Mid-November, toward the end of November, we'll do some Christmas kinds of things. And then talk about springtime therapy activities when March or April of next year, and really talk about ways to spice up our therapy sessions. And I found a really cute link for sensory bins. I put several on there last week right after we did the show, and then I found another one Thursday or Friday or so and popped it on there. So take a look at that, and if you haven't listened to last week's show, hopefully that'll make you want to do that. I've gotten good feedback from several people who have sent me little emails to say, oh, I made a sensory bin this week, and it went so well, and thank you for that idea. So I love it when we get feedback on the show, and we know people are actually listening. So that's
and Laura, I was listening too because I got my sensory bin together this week. Now I've had them in the past, but like I said, when I moved, I dumped it because the beans were really old.
Yeah, it was gross.
And I just figured it really didn't seem to be gross, but I just thought there's got to be an expiration date on beans, and it had been a long time, so I dumped them and then hadn't refilled it, but I did this week.
Right.
And I used it on, probably 5 or 6 different kids. And
how did it go?
It went really very well, particularly with the kids who tend to have some sensory things. Now, some of them balked a little bit about touching them, but I was able to use things that I knew they really, really liked. And those sensory seekers, now they were, the one little guy that I used it with really liked it. And, you know, I was a little bit tentative because he tends to be a kid who throws a lot of stuff. And I thought, boy, I can see the beans. And I just, I just kind of, tried out and see. And ironically, he liked it so much. He was so into squeezing the beans and digging in the beans. When a few would accidentally fall out, he was so purposeful about putting them back in.
Aww.
It was really cute because he tends to be a kid who gets really overstimulated very easily, and his reaction to that is to throw. I think he also kind of does it when he's done with something, but sometimes I think he's so overstimulated, it goes flying across the room.
Right.
He's, I don't know how purposeful or deliberate it is sometimes, but man, with those beans, he was all about keeping them in the box, and both his mother and his mom usually is at work, but she was home this week, and we were both marveling at, look at how, what he's doing. I mean, he just was so into it, he didn't want to lose one bean, so I was pleasantly surprised by him and how well he did with it, and very into it, so we will be doing more things in beans with that little fella.
Oh, well, that's good.
So it went well. Go ahead.
Did you hide things in there? Is that what you did?
Oh, absolutely. Animals. He's very into animals. That's his passion. Mm-hmm. So I had lots of different animals. I had characters, too, but he's not as into the characters. So he did that, but he was much more intrigued by the animals. So I pretty much stuck with that. And like I said, I have another little guy who tends to have some sensory sensitivity kind of stuff, avoids a fair number of things, and he liked animals, too. So I was doing the animals, but he was real tentative about, I kind of have to bring whatever it was to the top, and then he would very carefully remove it so as not to touch many beans.
It's so funny when you see that happen, and if parents don't understand sensory issues, or if a speech therapist maybe or a developmental therapist hasn't had a good background in that and they don't understand what's going on with that, it looks a little odd. So, and I'll find a lot of parents will not know what to attribute that tentativeness to. Mm-hmm. They don't understand why they're not just digging right in. And it's funny when you first see that if you've never seen that before. Or even when you've seen it for the 1,000th time, you think, look at that. Look at that.
Yeah. So he did well.
I'm
glad
that
worked pretty well. He was more tentative about it, but he was engaged with it for quite a while. So it was good. I really didn't have any kids who showed, no interest or pretty, I was able to use it.
Well, and why do you think that was?
The $8.50 I spent at Walmart to get my new beans for my box. So,
and this is my point. The reason that I think that you didn't have any kids not show an interest is because you were careful about the children you presented that to, and you really were considering whether that would be an engaging activity for them, where they are, what they like, what they don't like, what their sensory needs are, what their temperament styles are, where they are developmentally. So you can pretty much predict if that activity were going to work with the kids that you did it with last week, and it did. You probably had some kids that you immediately, when you saw the beans and getting your things out of the car for your home visit, and you thought, no way am I taking those in there.
Well, some of them are kind of beyond it, so I wouldn't really necessarily go there. And the one that I was really a little unsure about was the kid who tends to hurl everything across the room, and it was so weird to see him picking up each individual bean and putting them back in. I thought, well, go figure. I guess if he likes it enough, he's pretty darn good about where they end up. So he will definitely get the bean box again. Yes.
Oh, that's so good. The little boy that I'm just consulting on, that you, your little guy that you see that's pretty darn apraxic, they, when I saw them on Friday, they had a big bean box, and I wondered if you had taken that earlier, if that was an activity that they always do. But they had been playing in the beans, that little boy.
I had taken
brother.
Mine earlier, but actually I think it was the OT who encouraged that, and those kids love that. So she does that
well,
quite a bit.
Well, they seem to love it. They were all over the floor when I got there.
Yeah.
They had had a good time. I could tell. I could tell. And I thought,
I'm really
not
let
doing that
happen with mine, because I'm not into spending half of my session cleaning up beans. And like you said, I don't take a vacuum with me, so with me, I kind of made sure that it didn't give it. Mom probably just let them have at it, and it ended up
that's what
everywhere.
I think. That's what I think. And this was kind of a different circumstance, too, because she expected me a day later than what I got there, so it was kind of a surprise that I was even there. So I'm sure, It's funny when you type an email and say, I'll be there tomorrow, and if they don't read it until a day later and don't necessarily look at the date that it was sent, that's happened to me more than once. So,
luckily she was home and you got to see him and it went well.
Worked out great. He did great. But we're not talking about that tonight. Tonight we're talking about social skills. And don't all of you who are regular listeners groan at the same time and say, oh, my gosh, Laura and Kay talk about social skills every 2 or 3 weeks. But here's kind of a different spin on this. Or actually, it's probably not for those of you who've been longtime listeners. And so you just go on about your activity, whether you're working out or what was it this week that somebody sent the email that they, it was a new one that we had never heard before?
Oh, the really cute one. A mom with 5 kids who's a therapist. She hasn't practiced yet, but she said, add to your list of things you chuckle about I guess she is a therapist, but not practicing at the time.
Right.
And she said, I nurse babies. She has 5 kids under something like 9. And one of them's a newborn. So she nurses babies, she cans peaches, and her favorite is to clean the basement because she can do it late at night and listen uninterrupted.
Yeah, so continue on with whatever activity. And Kate and I, for some reason, get a big kick out of hearing what people do while they listen to the podcast. So if you have
we think it's funny that people listen to the podcast, Laura. It doesn't really matter what. Well, the working out is always a kick because we're not exactly fond of working out. So that's funny to us. The driving makes a lot of sense, but this mom has her hands full with young children, so she's definitely a multitasker and squeezes us in when she can. And we appreciate
and I thought it was really cute. We totally appreciate it. And so, but she asked me this question about social skills, and then I got, and you know how you always feel like, I was thinking, we've done that a lot. I don't know that we've really characterized it, though, you know, it's in one show and that we haven't really talked about it. And one thing I said to her back in this email, this question she was asking me, is that you have to look at social skills quantitatively and qualitatively. And I was thinking, well, I don't know if we've really done that or not, but I talk a lot about that in the conference, and I don't want people who come to conferences who've just listened to this podcast to think, oh, my goodness, I just heard her go on and on about that the other day. And then I thought, when I hear something that may be new, or a lot of times it's stuff that I already knew, but I didn't even realize that I already knew it, that it's good to hear it repeated pretty quickly after you really hear it the first time, so that you can really think about it and synthesize that information and figure out how that makes its way into real live everyday practice. And so then, I was kind of going through this whole process, because actually I do kind of plan the show and think about what we're going to do and say and talk about. And then, like, the next day I got an email saying pretty much the same thing, but from a mom, and she says, my son's therapist tell me that he's not social, but I just don't see it. And we've talked about that a lot on the show, and we certainly see that a lot in our practices, where a mom will say, I don't understand what you mean by social, because to me he looks fine. But when you have, when you don't have hundreds of children and past experiences to compare him to, and when he's just your baby, the things that he or she might do really do seem normal, because it's your normal and your typical. And so sometimes when someone comes in new and it's a professional evaluation, That person can be a little bit more objective and really, again, analyze those social skills in a different way. And again, we're going to look at them quantitatively, meaning how many times we see it. Sometimes we'll say to a mother, and we'll take some specific examples in a minute, you know, how many times does he do X? And she'll say, oh, he's done that before. And then you really start to talk with her about it. And she'll say, yeah, 3 or 4 months ago he did that one time, one day. And for any skill that we're measuring, we really need to see it more consistently than that before we would give a child credit for that. And so that's the quantitative way that we're going to analyze these social skills. And then the next part would be qualitative, and that's just making sure that no matter who we're looking at the skill or analyzing the skill or being asked, does your kid do this, he or she would definitively say yes, because that's what happens with lots of our kids. If you are hedging on whether a kid can do something or not, I almost always want to say, well, then that's not consistent enough, or the quality is not there, meaning that it's not a for sure definitive yes. So, again, that's something that we might not give a kid credit for. Now, that's different from an emerging skill when it's just starting to happen. But as we talk about what the social skills are, that'll make a little more sense. But I wanted to go ahead and throw those two terms out there when we look at skills, quantitatively and qualitatively. Do you think about things that way, Kate, when you're doing an assessment or talking about this kind of thing with moms? What language do you use when you're talking about that with moms? You probably just say consistency, don't you?
I think I do, yes. Yeah. I wouldn't probably use that terminology. I think I say it's inconsistent. It's not consistent enough to really say that it's achieved. You know, it's emerging,
right.
I'm not seeing it at all. I think I talk about consistency and not qualitative versus quantitative on this.
And I think that I do that with parents too. But for therapists, I think it's better that we think about it in these terms, so that we're really asking it in a way with the mom, especially when we're first meeting a child and we're not sure what he or she can do. And lots of our information that we gather from parents in the beginning is by report, because you just can't see every single skill a child has achieved within that first assessment period, even if it's a couple of hours. You have to get lots of your information by report. And so it's important for us as evaluators to be able to ask the questions in the way that will elicit more accurate responses. And sometimes it is better to talk about skills in terms of consistency, and even if you're not saying quantitatively and qualitatively, because you don't want to just totally turn the mom off, it's better to kind of think about it in that way so that you make sure that you are really assessing what a kid truly does versus something that's just a random skill that he or she might have exhibited at one time or another, but it's not consistent. Or it might even be atypical. It might even be, again, a qualitative difference, something that's not quite what you want to measure. So let's talk about what some of these are. Okay, this list, again, is one that I discuss in my conference, Early Speech Language Development, Taking Theory to the Floor. And the list of social skills I pulled from lots of different sources. Remember several years ago, Kate, when I really started looking at social skills, and you had gotten the affect-based language curriculum, and I borrowed it from you and never gave it back. And started. I feel guilty every time I say that. I think, gosh, we might give it back. At least we could pay her for that. But it's really
detailed. I do remember
detailed.
That, actually.
It's a really detailed measure, and again, it's a Dr. Greenspan tool, Stanley Greenspan, and he paired up with a speech pathologist, Diane Lewis, and they made this big curriculum for targeting language skills in children, and they say, and they used affect or emotion and animation and really that whole relationship-based approach to teach language. And certainly that's something that that philosophy we adhere to and talk about, and, you know, that's what we believe too. And so there was a big, long checklist in there. And that was almost overload when you were looking at a kid's social skills, although I think that's a great tool to use if you treat lots of kids who are on the spectrum and you want a way to really quantify and qualify their social skills. And again, he calls that his long checklist something like co-regulated, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's a really long title, you know, and we just think about it as social skills. So I started looking at that and thinking, okay, that's almost too much information. Yet so many tools that speech language pathologists are used to evaluate children birth to three hardly have any information at all about social skills. So you want to hit kind of a happy medium on that to know what's important. How can we really evaluate that? When we're talking to a mom about social skills and really looking at a child about social skills, what is it that we want to look at? So then I started looking at tools that maybe developmental therapists and interventionists like Kate would use. And most of those five area assessments have a social skills component on them. Kate, you use the HELP. And I can't remember what HELP stands for. What is that?
It's Hawaii Early Learning Profile.
Right, and there's a social skills section on there, right? Is it called social skills on there? I can't remember.
Social-emotional skills, yeah.
Okay, so it's called that. I use the Rossetti Infant-Toddler Language Scales, my favorite test of all time for children birth to three, and there's an interaction attachment portion on that test. So that gives us some information, too. So I started looking and pulling information from all of these different tools so that I could develop my own little checklist and to give me a better way to talk to moms about it, because nothing can derail a parent interview when you start to bring up, I'm a little concerned about his social skills, and the mom says, what are you talking about? He's social. And she's ready to move on, you know, and I say this in the conference, what do? Do you just close your book and say, well, thank you very much? You don't really do that. You've got to have a way to really quantify it and qualify it and talk about what these key skills are. Okay, hold that thought. We have a caller. We're going to go to caller, and then we'll come back and pick up where we left off right there. Hi, caller. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Laura. My name is Jane. I'm calling for the second time. I called once. And I don't know if you remember me.
I remember you, Jane. We were talking about play and toys when you called, right?
Yes. And I always try to call, but, you know. Anyway, I just want to give some updates and follow up.
Sure.
When I last called. We were trying to make that pretend play going, and, you know, he was really resistant, and the guy said, you know, he's not ready. You can try. Use Thomas everywhere. Feed Thomas. Bathe Thomas. Do Thomas with everything. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I totally remember that.
Yeah. So right away, next day, I started doing that, and it really worked with Thomas, and what I did also, I went and bought a Dora set on eBay. You know, they have these little Dora figurines, and because he likes Dora as well, not as much as Thomas, but he does, you know, understand Dora and likes Dora. So, and now we are getting to the point, at first, he would cry, and I don't want anything to do with this. But then now he kind of, when we say, oh, let's feed Dora, give Dora, and now actually with any kind of figurine, we ask him, oh, what about, you know, we have this Fisher-Price little people. Oh,
yeah.
The little girl, you know, she wants some food. And now he grabs the spoon and he puts in the mouth.
Yay!
Yeah, by himself, but he's not so resistant. Of course, he just do that if we say to him, oh, she's hungry,
right.
You know. But this is, you know, as, you know, with his autism, we know it's going to take a while for him. But just the point that he's not resistant anymore is, to me,
We told you.
It opened a door, and I got amazed that, and I just recently, actually, I got your book, and
Jane? Is that, are you talking about Teach Me to Play with You? That book?
Yes.
Okay.
So I just got some weeks ago, and so you gave me the DVD when I called.
Right.
And I watched the DVD, and, you know, I try to be playful as well, because I know it can be boring. although I think in the DVD, the kids, they seem to know what you're talking about. more than what my son does.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and let me address that, because people have said that to me before, and let me just say that most of the children that when I videoed them, I did pick children that that I knew really well and that I knew their parents really well, and these were children that had been on my caseload a long time. There were a couple of kids in the Apraxia DVD that I had just started with, but for the most part, for that first DVD, for Teach Me to Talk with You, since that was my, or Teach Me to Talk, that was my very first product, and so I wanted to make it as easy for me with that first effort. And so again, I really handpicked those kids, and again, just for how that fell during that point in my caseload, most of those were kids that I had had for a long time. And so, yeah, they weren't starting at the very beginning where they hardly knew anything. Now, the other DVDs, again, Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 and 2, because that's a receptive language delay, you might see some children that are more similar to your son in there, because there were children who were a little newer in therapy with me that I had not worked with as often, and children who were more significantly delayed and impaired than children that were in Teach Me to Talk. So that's kind of a difference, too. I wanted to point that out as well.
No, yeah, but it's good because we do, you do see some affect how you use some toys and how you can approach some toys, you know, in a better way. Anyway, and so we are working on
that. Did he respond to those changes, Jane? Did he respond to those changes when you tried to make yourself be more fun and more upbeat and more animated? Did he like that?
Yeah, we responded. He's responding really well to the pretending part, but that's why I said I'm calling again, because, like, I bought that little microwave that you use.
Yeah.
And at first, he was scared of the microwave.
Yeah.
And but now, amazingly, I bought this food set at Target. Well, really cheap. They have like a bucket full of like pretend food for like, you know, $14. And
yeah.
And so we were, and then with one of the therapists, I mean, I have to give the credit for her, because she was the one that made him not be so scared and say, look, oh, I'm going to just put here and I'm going to cook, you know, in a way that she was not asking him. And I think that what I did wrong is that I was asking him, let's put together. And now, amazingly, he himself wants to open and he puts the food inside and he wants to touch the bottom and push it hard. Which to me is like, I still get amazed, because for him it's such a huge thing for him. But the problem that we are getting right now, I think I'm getting, and I see that sometimes they get frustrated as well, the DIs, is that I don't know if it's the attention of the autism thing or if he's getting aware of the work he has to do. Because we try to be so playful and so, but he runs so much, he gets to the point that I ask him to say something. You know, like, for example, I have the same toy that, you know, he hammers the balls and the ball goes down.
Yeah.
And I do like you do, you know, and I say, I got it. What do you mean? You want the hammer? And when I say, hammer, and he's like, starts to cry, like, I don't want to say hammer. I just want to go with Judith. And then he just leaves.
Yeah.
He gives up. And then he runs. And he's
a lot.
He runs to the sofa. He runs out of the play. He runs. When he finally comes, he just want to stand 30 seconds and he runs again and runs again or cry or don't want to do it, don't want to talk. And I don't know if he's getting much aware or if he's tired. I cannot afford to buy a toy, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to buy many books as I can afford to try to have ideas to use the toy that I have.
Sometimes with kids like that, Jane, they don't even know why they don't like it yet. But if you just keep on, like you said, your therapist did with the microwave, and she just went on and just played with that almost by herself and demonstrated how fun it was, sometimes those kids will come around. If you just keep on modeling it for them and acting like it's pretty fun. When kids run away, it's not always because they don't like what you're doing. Sometimes it's sensory overload. If he has sensory issues, hammering that ball, most kids really do like that, but some kids will be turned off a little by the noise or
by...
He likes it because he asked me to...
But he wants to play by himself. If I hold the ball and ask him, the thing that every time I'm trying to help him to say something, and when I start to do that, he kind of get annoyed. I'm like, I don't want to say anything. Just don't bother me. I want to play by myself.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, well, I think you're doing the right thing. Yeah, I think you're doing the right thing by insisting that you get to play too, because engagement, you know, he's not really going to learn how to talk all by himself.
Yeah.
You've got to be part of that. What you might do, instead of really asking him and telling him to say stuff, is just focus on modeling that for a while and just on cheerfully saying, ball, hammer, and doing the play routine and just you know, narrating as you go. And again,
now,
you don't want it to be – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Maybe I'm holding him because I know I hold the ball and put it in my mouth and ask him to say green and stuff. And I think maybe he's getting tired of that because I do maybe too much. I don't know.
That sounds like it might be a little bit too much to me. And Kate was just telling me a story like this the other day about a kid that I'm consulting on that she's seeing. And, Kate, do you remember that when you were talking about our little guy the other day and you said he was getting so frustrated, so I just started to really model more and see what would happen. Do you remember that conversation? Is that the advice that you would give Jane, too?
I believe it is. I mean, we have the same things happen to us, you know, with particular kids, and sometimes it is kind of backing off and focusing more on the play and the engaging him and not putting quite so many commands on him so that he's not as frustrated. I don't know. I also kind of wonder, like, you say he'd rather play with it by himself. Some things, I don't know if you're keeping some things for just those times you play with him so that he makes the association. Well, you know, if I'm going to get to do this, it's going to include my mom, whether that would be his preference or not. But if he knows, if I balk and get upset and run away and choose not to do this, ultimately, mom's going to give it to me, and I get to do it by myself. I mean, part of our hook in a therapy session is kids know the toys come with us and the toys leave with us, and they do sometimes perform more readily and without as much anxiousness or, you know, desire to get away because they know, whether they fully understand it or not, they have some concept of these toys are leaving when Kate and Laura leave my house. So they know we're kind of a necessary evil, if you will. We're part of the equation. And for some things, at least for a period of time, Jane, you may want to keep those things for just your times when you play with him. And he'll know that pretty quickly. When you're having your quote-unquote therapy play session with him, have some special things that he does not have access to so that he knows.
No, and this toys he doesn't have access. Most of the toys, I leave some toys, just a couple of toys out, because our effort is everything is on buckets and stuff so he can ask for it.
Yeah.
And this toy that he laughs a lot because I don't want him to get tired because I see that sometimes he does get tired. Like puzzles, he gets tired of it. And I wanted to hold on, like, all the craft supplies are all, so it can be something new for him. Because I see that when we go to see each other at hospital, when he gets there, he's so much better because all his new stuff and exciting stuff.
Right.
And, you know.
So you are keeping some things put up. So, well, that's good. Then I guess it probably is a matter of putting a little bit too much pressure on him. And frankly, I think that therapist, because let's say this, one line that I use with parents a lot is moms specifically, moms get the worst from their kids and they get the best from their kids. And I do think that kids will hesitate or throw a fit or get upset sometimes more easily with mom than they will with therapists. And I think that's because they're so familiar with you. They know what they can pull and that you're going to love them regardless. And so they
as you should.
Nature.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's just the way it is. It's not because you've done anything wrong with him. It's just because you're mommy. You know,
yeah, the attention issue is something huge on him because even in the hospital, some days he gets really excited because of new toys and everything. But some days are hard at the hospital because he barely want to say he gets so distracted. And the therapist was saying to me that he's very aware of everything around him because he pays attention even on the shadows of people that go in the hallway.
Right.
And she said, you know, give him a time, because I go inside. I don't stay outside. I go and I just, you know, look at
watch.
What she's doing just so I can learn. But
sure.
And she said, give me a time for him because, you know, he just started just 3 weeks ago. So it's just really 3 sessions in the hospital. So everything is new, you know, the room and, you know, the therapist is new for him.
But I love that she pointed that out to you and that she said, just give him some time to settle in. And I think that's huge. And I think that's a very important point, that he will settle down and he'll get used to that routine. I'm glad that he's excited, but with the excitement, you know, really does sometimes come distraction because he's looking around like, what else can I see? What else is there? You know, what else? This is so new. So I think she's right, and I think that's good advice.
She's introducing packs to him, and we can see when it's something that he really likes. He loves that pig, you know, that put the coins inside for Fisher Price. And I don't even buy it because I want him to be interested in the hospital with that.
Good
him
for
to
you.
and when she puts the packs picture of the pig, right away he's really good. Like he gets the. But when it's some toy that he's not really care about, he looks at the packs and is like, I don't want to give you the right one. I'm like, I don't want anything to be here. You know, he gets really distracted. So she also is learning what he really likes and what he's not like. I saw the last time she was kind of, I think this is not working with you. Let's try something else. Because I think she wants to find other options than just the pig and just the, you know, the penguin and the frog. That's why
that
we have the penguin, the frog, and the ball that goes down the spiral.
Yeah.
This is his favorite and the pig. But I think she wants to find something else that makes him to stay and engage. But so she said the good thing is we know that when he really wants and he's really concentrated, he can do really well. But the thing for me is the concentration. And as you said, I listened on the last podcast. My therapist, the one that works, they don't bring toys. And I think sometimes I say to them that I feel that he's tired, and sometimes they kind of bring one, but they say that here in New Jersey, the manager says it for them to not bring toys. And I think they bring to him because they feel they're having also this issue with him of attention. But, you know, you get to that point that I'm trying.
You know what, you might.
To learn all of the books because I have to get out of the box, you know, how to use the toys I have because also they're expensive, you know.
Right. You know, what you might do are those things that you put up that you don't play with very often. Let the therapist that come use those things.
Yay.
And lots of states and programs are going to the model where they tell their therapist, do not take toys. I mean, I get letter after email after email after email about that. Lots of states do that. And sometimes therapists don't feel that they have an option, that they can go against that directive. Now, some of us who are a little older and have practiced a long time say, I don't really care what you say. I'm going to do what I know works. But again, you know, you can't really change that if they don't feel like they can bring toys. I would just keep doing what you're doing and saving some of those things that he likes and he doesn't get to play with very much for when they're there so that they'll have something novel to do too. And, you know, I understand what you're saying about feeling like you have to keep going and buying something new to get his attention, but really as his skills get better, that will decrease as his play mm-hmm. skills and his interest expand, and that's just going to be over time and with maturity and with, you know, repeated exposures to things. That'll get better. Don't you see that, Kate? You have a lot of kids that don't look like they're very interested in much at all, but then they start to get some skills, and then all of a sudden play gets better too.
Oftentimes that's the case, I would say. And I usually explain that to parents because sometimes they're concerned that he didn't really attend for very long, and part of it is the novelty of the things, and part of it is their skills aren't really intact yet, so everything is a challenge. But once they get pretty good at something, they're
right.
just like, and this is another one of my standard lines, when they get good at things, they enjoy them more. They're just like adults.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who likes mm-hmm. to do something that's difficult? Not too many people. You know, we like what's easy and what's comfortable and what's familiar. So you kind of have to build the foundation for those things to be successful.
Yeah, I think my concern is because, you know, talking about the language, which is about the problem, is that I think in my mind I have, like, if I don't work and I don't push him, or he's going to lose the few things that he knows, or he's going to not learn more words. But I guess that if he hears from me...
Jane, we're not saying don't push it. We're just saying be sure when you start out playing with him that
mm-hmm.
it's totally fun, and that at the beginning you're really modeling and really, you know, having a good time and saying
mm-hmm.
the words that you want him to say. And then you'll gauge when he's ready for you to push a little bit and when
mm-hmm.
he's ready for to really pop out those words. You know, we're not telling you not to ever push, because goodness knows, I could have some kids that I could go a whole hour, and if I didn't pretty much require them to say something, they might
mm-hmm.
not say much of anything, versus when I really bump it up and really give them cues to say things.
Yeah.
But if he's
and
doing lots and lots of running away, he's telling you that's too much. I mean, that's what that message seems to be to me. So start out with the modeling, and then you'll gauge when you've really got him and really have him interested. That's when you put a little pressure on and pleasantly persist that he say those things, that he, you know, repeat you and imitate you.
Jane, I don't recall, but I'm wondering whether you have an OT on your team. And I wonder also if he or she has talked to you about things that you can do to kind of help him slow down and focus a little better?
Yes, I have, and he also does OT at the hospital, and I have one at home.
Good.
Yeah, we all talking about this all the time, and we are trying massage, and we are trying sensory beans and all these kind of things, but, you know, his sensory seeking is a lot.
Right.
So, you know, we all do that, but I think there is a lot of maybe on my part too much pushing on him, you know.
Yeah. And again, that's just a fine art with really knowing when he's ready and when he can do that versus when you should just focus on modeling and having him imitate you kind of on his own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And don't feel badly about that, because a lot of therapists don't understand that either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't beat yourself up about that, because that whole timing issue, that takes a lot of just repeated practice to know what's going to work and what's not going to work, and when it's too much and when it's not enough. And it is hard to kind of find that right balance. But you're
mm-hmm.
doing such a good job trying and really working through these issues with him versus just thinking, okay, I'm taking him for therapy and that's it. You know, he...
Mm-hmm.
He only gets this with the therapist. I'm so proud of you for your persistence and you really making therapy at home one of your priorities. And again, hang in there. I mean, this is a lot of people make a career out of this. You don't just automatically know how to do it, you know? So
you're
doing a good job.
I just got started with your book, and I do it's too much information, so I'm just taking slow in the first chapters, and I also bought There is one book on Amazon, probably you know, that Teach and Play Skills to Children with Autism on the Autism Spectrum.
I haven't read that.
I don't know that one either.
Yeah, it's a very good book, actually. And I will do that. I will put a link on your Facebook.
Okay.
So other people
good.
Can check. But she's not, she's just a mom that made a book. It's not like you kind of
right.
teach us how to do, but I think everything that I can learn to better play with him.
Yeah.
But also, I just want to point that I think one thing that I just I remember now is that we just went through his 6 month progress summary, and
uh-huh.
on his development, he's 19 months, but his age is 7 months. And sometimes I think as we kind of have to remember that, I have to remember
sure.
that to myself. That on his
yeah.
mind, he's just 19 months and he's not 31 months.
Right.
And I cannot require him the things from a 31 month old.
Yeah.
Right.
And your all of your expectations have to be at that 19 month level for
mm-hmm.
language, for what he understands,
mm-hmm.
for
how long
his
he'll
behavior,
attend to things and
yeah,
pay attention
for how
to
long
things.
His attention
yeah.
span. Because you
yeah.
wouldn't expect an 18 or 19 month old toddler to be able to play with you as much
yeah.
as long as you would be
yeah.
expecting a little boy who's going to be 3 in a few months. So
that's
very,
right.
very good point. Very good point. And look,
and
you came to
his,
that conclusion on your own.
Yeah, on his cognitive skills, he's just 15 months. So it's very low too. So
yeah, and so keep your expectations at that level because then you won't be disappointed in him or yourself.
Yeah.
When you're playing with him. And you know, really, I tell moms when they're working with their kids, all I want them to, that play time, I want them to do 10, 15, 20 minutes several times a day, not an hour at a time. Because
mm-hmm,
most
mm-hmm.
kids can't do that. And so if you're
yeah.
looking at a, you know, he stays with you 10 minutes, you know,
yeah.
woohoo, that's
yeah.
great.
And
look at it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and he already works so hard because we do 11 hours of therapy a week. So
he's getting lots
try,
of therapy.
He
and
is.
I'm
You're
trying
doing a great
to do
job
some more
out.
Extra at home with him.
Yeah.
So,
well, Jane, the other
way to end on a good note, the thing that proves that you know he can get there is that when he sees my iPhone, he says phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wanted it, didn't he?
And it's like, why when you see the phone, you right away you know what to do, but when it's other things, you don't.
Because
he wasn't
as really, really visual and probably a big strength for him. I mean,
yes,
I've
really
have
visual.
Lots of kids
yeah.
who love, they love
yeah.
those iPhones, and it's amazing
yeah.
how smart they can look when they figure out how to use them. They can outperform
yeah.
me sometimes on my iPhone.
Yeah.
They can
mm-hmm.
call people. They can get to games. They can do all this
mm-hmm.
amazing stuff. So you know
yeah.
that there are
mm-hmm.
some cognitive strengths there, which tend to be visual with kids on the spectrum. The other thing I want
yeah.
to say, just for the record, Jane, is
mm-hmm.
understand that he's going to have his good times and his bad times, his on times and his off times. And
yeah.
just because the time before you played with him, he was able to do something. The fact may be related to what's going on with him sensory-wise, what's going on
mm-hmm.
with him physically. Who knows what the variables are, but there are lots of variables, and kids, even typically developing kids, vary quite a bit from time to time, but certainly kids who have delays and you know are on the spectrum and have all these other things going on,
mm-hmm.
they vary hugely, and so
mm-hmm.
it's very easy to think that, well, I played with him yesterday with this, and he did this. So today he should be able to do this and maybe something else. And that isn't often
right.
the case, that one time you see something and you think it's great, and then you
mm-hmm.
assume and hope that the next time you'll see it, and chances are you may not. That's just
mm-hmm.
kind of the way things are, and you just have to
yeah,
persevering and kind of meeting him where he is that moment. And it's going to vary a lot. I mean, it's just
yeah.
that's the way it is.
Yeah, and he's screaming.
Okay.
Yes, he is. Well, I'm just wanted to give an update and say thank you so much that it really worked what you guys said to me last time. And I really appreciate your feedback because it really, sometimes we just, you know, we need this light bulb from people that can help us, you know, to keep going. So I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the Facebook link that I thought was great, Laura, that you gave this idea of the sensory beings. It was great that he's getting so fond of his pasta beans and, you know, the bucket of beans. So I'm not going to buy these frogs and stuff and do a fall bean for him and all this stuff. So I appreciate
We appreciate hearing back from you. We love follow-up calls to hear how things are going. It sounds like you're doing a great job, Jane, getting him to do the pretend stuff that you're doing, and you followed our lead on use the stuff he loves, and that seemed to help. And you're hanging in there, and you're going to see progress.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Call us in a couple of months and update us again, okay?
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. I love hearing from someone that we heard from a couple months ago and her saying, it's better.
Yeah.
That was good.
And it does sound like he's made real progress on the pretend play stuff, that he's willing to do a variety of things, and he's generalized it to the little people, even though that initially wasn't something he was interested in. So she's making progress. Sometimes I'm the same way. I see something and I think, yeah, but I want this and I want this and I want this. And it's like you got to hang on to the successes and meet him where he is. And I do think it's important for her to realize that where he is one moment is probably not where he is another moment. And if you try and do the same thing just because it worked the time before, and we see therapists doing this all the time too. It's not just a mommy mistake. It's, you know, and have I been guilty of it? You bet. And like I said with the kid last week, I could see, based on how he was performing, this is not going to be his best performance day. I've got to meet him where he is. I had to kind of back it down. I was putting too many demands on him, and I was getting behavioral kind of overflow outburst stuff. Nothing horrible, but he really wasn't doing, you know, I was losing him because I was putting the pressure I was able to put on him the session before, and for whatever reason, he wasn't as on that day. You know, so I had to kind of back it down and remind myself, keep it playful, just model, don't put so many demands on him verbally, and I did, and he kind of came around. Was it his best session? No, but it was pretty good, and that far exceeds a total disaster, you know?
it totally does, and with those kinds of kids, and I say this all the time to moms, you really can't measure progress, like Jane was talking about, from day to day with her little boy. She can't even really measure progress from week to week with him. It's got to be longer periods of time, month to month, quarter to quarter. I tell moms to think about it season to season. Is he doing more in the fall than we had him in the summer? In the winter, is he going to do more than we had him do this fall? You have to think about progress with kids like that, especially kids, whether they be on the spectrum or whether they be severely apraxic or the more significantly delayed or disordered they are, the more leeway you have to give with judging progress with longer periods of time. It absolutely cannot be from day to day because you will get so frustrated with the kid. And, you know, when that happens, moms either totally just throw their hands up and say, forget it, this isn't worth it, it's not working, I'm not going to do it anymore, or they go the opposite way and push and push and push, and then the kid just completely falls apart, and you do start to see lots of those behavioral things. And so if you take the pressure off and look at progress over big spans of time, it's going to be better for the kid. And then you'll feel better about yourself, too. And think about what she's saying. She sounds like, Jane, that just called, that she's doing an amazing job. I mean, that kind of mom she's taking the time to pursue all of these resources. He's getting therapy at the hospital. He's getting therapy at home. She sounds like she's spent a buku of money on toys. She's buying resources. She's talking about, she's gotten my book. She's gotten another book. She's watched the DVDs. I mean, I would just want to hug her and say, you are mother of the year with the kind of effort that she's making, yet she still is putting herself under a lot of pressure and feeling. I mean, you can hear the frustration in her voice when she's doing all she can humanly do. I mean, she's going to pretty much probably end up with the skills of a therapist after this is over. She's doing so much self-education, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't want her to put herself under that much pressure with judging day after day. And it's good that she's thinking, okay, the clock is ticking. He's 31 months. I've got to help him get this. But at the same time, she doesn't need to make herself put herself under the gun like that, because hardly anybody can perform under that set of circumstances.
Right.
And people do make their careers out of this, and it's really hard for a mom to make herself feel like she's just completely up to speed. And that's not to say that she shouldn't try and that she shouldn't keep doing therapy at home. Goodness knows, I love mothers like her and like that. But at the same time, she needs to pat herself on the back and give herself a little bit of a break, because I think she's doing all she can do based on what she said.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like she's really doing everything she can. And he is progressing. It's just we all want, you know, the next step. And that is the nature of what we do. But you do kind of have to take a little bit of a backseat sometimes and realize, wow, 3 months ago he couldn't do any of this. Or 6 months ago he played with nothing. Now I have this collection of things that he's interested in. Look how functional his play is. And look what he's able to do. And look at his receptive language skills. And, you know, all these great things. But it's easy to want the next thing, or to, you know, have a finished product. And it just really doesn't ever really go that way.
It doesn't work that way. Yeah.
No.
It really doesn't.
But
and
she, by anybody's standards, would get an award for being a committed, caring, diligent mother, doing everything she can do. So hang in there. It's going to work. I think she just needs to give herself a little more credit and a little less pressure, and she'll see him come around. You know,
I know,
again.
But I hope her therapists are her cheerleaders. And if they're not being her cheerleaders, maybe we can be that for her and tell her that she is doing a really, really, really great job. I mean, mothers do not get better than that. With really looking at where their kids are, really thinking, okay, I'm going to do my part at home. I'm going to get myself educated. I'm going to take an important part in his treatment. And she certainly sounds like she's doing all that. And I do think if she would think about it in smaller chunks of time, like 10 or 15 minutes at a time, not an hour. I don't remember if she worked or not. Did she say she works?
I don't recall,
this,
Laura.
Yeah, and this happens a lot with working moms, because they'll say, well, I'm not home with them all day, so I've got to do all this. And then I think they're coming in at night. They're dog tired themselves from working all day, plus trying to, you know, just do all the mom, you know, I laugh when I walk in the house and say, okay, my second shift has started, because I've done my first shift as a speech pathologist, and now my second shift is doing the laundry and cooking the food and cleaning and all those things. And so sometimes when moms are adding the mom therapy part, which they can and should do, and then they make it, you know, it's all got to get done right now. It's too rushed. It's there's too much pressure, again, internally on themselves and externally on their child. And the kid does respond by running away and crying, and it's not as fun, and it's not as meaningful and as interactive and as engaging. It all becomes about get it done, get it done, get it done. And lots of times our kids just can't respond under those circumstances. So I don't know if that's the case with her, but that's happened more than once with kids on my caseload, with working moms who are pretty type A, pretty intense, and they need to just kind of check that little task off the to-do list. And sometimes it's not that easy. And if I talk to them about slowing down a little bit and thinking about it in terms of 10 or 15 minutes, not 45 minutes or an hour at the worst possible part of the day, you know, the bewitching hour is what lots of families call that, you know, that dinner time hour, because everybody's exhausted and they're trying to get everything done at once. If they can pull back from that a little bit, and it makes it a little more comfortable for everybody. Because he sounded like he was having a hard time even when we were on the phone tonight.
Yeah.
So that just, yeah. Which is pretty common this time of day. So I don't know that that's going on with her, but I've certainly seen that happen in other families too.
Right. Well, I don't remember her personal situation with work or not, but sure sounds like she's making time for him. So we always like that. That sounds like it's
going to
go well.
She's doing great with that. she's doing great with that. All right. Well, we are not going to tackle what we were going to talk about tonight, and that is just fine because I would rather have an update and a live caller any night. So that was great. So next week we'll pick back up talking about how we look at children's social skills, how we analyze that qualitatively and quantitatively, making sure it's consistent, making sure it's exactly what we would like to see, and then talking about how we work on some of those things in the context of other therapy activities to help children become more socially engaged with other people, because social skills are the foundation for communication and the foundation for language development. And if kids don't want to be with other people, they're not developmentally ready to communicate yet. And sometimes we don't say that clearly enough. So we'll end with that on this show, and we'll start with it on next week's show, next Sunday night at 6. So I hope everybody will join us then. Parting words, Kate?
That sounds good. Have good conferences this week. I know you will. And I guess we have our topic for next week.
We do. Thanks so much. Talk
Thank
to you later.
You.
Bye.